Attention FM DJs in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
It's 38 seconds after the hour of noon in this, the month of May, in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day live. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio, it is the Rick Emerson Show. We thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. Live from beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Thank you. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Thank you, and welcome to Day 12. Maybe it'd help if I just sent the Sounders over.
That could be a good help for them.
Maybe. Maybe I'll just take the sound effects, and I'll just put them up there, and then you can just get them off the website.
You know, it's my own fault, I have to say. The person in question, just asked them. I asked them to be our friend on MySpace.
It's okay.
Done.
I'm sorry about that.
It's okay. Stealing it. The imitation is the sincerest form. All right, it's 503-733-2970, or you can email us, rick@rickemerson.com. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, an exercise in broadcast whimsicality. Here's what's coming up today. I swear on the body of somebody dead. Today we will get to this the brand new watch. Now, this is a watch we prepared on Tuesday. I talked about Wednesday. We forgot yesterday, and that we will then launch today. One of the stories is now outdated. The other one you've probably heard by now. Doesn't matter. We're going to do them both. We're going to pretend that they're new and fresh and exciting. And you will act as though you are interested. Because it was a busy program. It's not my fault. I meant to get to it. There were external forces that prohibited me from doing so. So today we will conduct a brand new inauguration of a watch on the Rick Emerson Show. Intern Scotty J. He's in the house today. We'll have another Scotty J. Man on the Street segment, which I have not heard. I have not previewed it. I have not listened to it in advance. I have no idea what contents are within.
Did he show up early again today?
He did. He was here like 9:55. I don't even have anything for him to do. I'm going to start breaking stuff or staining the carpet or something just so I have stuff for him to clean. I have nothing for him to do. What else? We did not talk about Mount St. Helens erupting, nor shall we. But today we will have a top five from that day, because the true tragedy was not the loss of life, property, destruction, and damage, death to wildlife and various elements of the wilderness. The true terror was the musical horror being unleashed on the world on that day. So we will do the top five songs from this week in 1980, the top five songs from May 19th, 1980. We will talk endlessly and without ceasing about the Da Vinci Code. Not that I care about it, not that anybody really cares about it. It's just in the, it's like a law. When you sign up to be a talk radio host, you have to sign a contract that whatever's on the front of the purple section of USA Today, you will mention in that day's program. It is just sort of a, it's a requirement. So here it is, right there. Right there at the bottom where that Craig Wilson section normally is. So we will be talking to CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy in Atlanta. See, here's the thing is, we told the people at CNN that we want to talk to Ed about the Da Vinci Code. I don't, but we were obliged to say that so I could get him on to talk about Jimmy Hoffa, because yesterday they were digging a bone somewhere looking for the body of Jimmy Hoffa. So we'll talk just in a very cursory fashion today about the Da Vinci Code. Then we will move on to the discovery of the corpse of Jimmy Hoffa, if in fact that has happened. We got that. What else? Lisa Goddard's going to be here talking about this English as a national language business, which I think passed.
Yes.
Well, passed the Senate, right?
It passed the Senate.
Because then it's got to... Wait, I'm just a bill sitting on Capitol Hill. No. So it's got to the Senate, House, and then something, and then signed into law?
Yes.
It doesn't have to be ratified. No, that's an amendment. Well, it's got to do something. So something happened, and then something else will take place. And then...
The lawmaker said it will promote national unity.
Okay.
Among English speakers, anyway.
Yes. All right. And you'll be able to run faster and jump higher.
They are trying to make an assimilation statement.
All right. So we'll get to all of that later. We'll do the tabloid recap as well. We are joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon at the Nerve Center, at the Control Post, the Command Center, the nucleus of this, the bridge of the Rick Emerson radio program. And I'm going to do this new segment on the Rick Emerson show, and it's just going to be called Random Crap That I Hear While Walking By Various Rooms in the Building. I will tell you this, that by walking by, I'm not going to say it was the engineering department, but an office here that was very similar to but legally distinct from the engineering department. I walked by this morning, and here's the phrase I heard. No, 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 he's got all the Star Trek porn. No, it's backed up on his hard drive. No, I'll show you later. And then I walk in here, and the first thing out of Sarah Dillon's mouth, I'm going to do a whole new segment, a recurring bit on the Rick Emerson Show entitled Sarah Dillon Points Out the Flaws in Other Women. Because I walk in, and the first thing Sarah, I'm in the studio 3.5 seconds. And Sarah says, I swear to God, I don't even really know what this means. And to tell you the truth, as Morgan Freeman would say, to tell you the truth, I don't want to know. I walk in, and Sarah Dillon immediately says, come here, Tyra Banks has a sticky forehead. Is it Tyra or Tyra?
Tyra.
Whatever. The key phrase there is sticky forehead. So we'll
and
find...
And a hairy upper lip. I'm, you
and
know
she's
what?
Got pointy knees.
She makes her career out of, like, telling models they need to lose weight or do whatever, you know? Yeah. And then she goes and, like, what, grows an inch-long mustache? Like, that's not something you should do, Tyra.
Good times. All right, that's all on the way. Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen, is working on the following stories for your edification on this Friday.
A Portland woman is arrested at Donald Rumsfeld's house. A BMW driver clocked at 146 miles an hour in Troutdale. An 81-year-old pilot crashed into some trees in Battleground, but he'll be okay. Not so for Misha Barton. Her character was killed off on the OC last night.
Oh, okay. There you go. And thus endeth the preview segment.
All right, there you go.
So we got that. Scott Daly, we'll talk to him later on today, and we're counting down to the implosion of the Trojan nuclear facility and all of that. And plus, we have this. Now, I got to tell you, this is, people think that we have no heart on the Rick Emerson Show. They think that we have no soul, that we're a people without sympathy, lacking in empathy in every real way. That is largely true, but it's not entirely true. We agonized long and hard this morning about this Britney Spears story, whether to post the picture, whether to talk about it, whether to poke fun. And for most of this morning, we had decided against it because there is, and I won't give away the entire punchline because there's one phrase that made the entire story worthwhile to us. I'm working my way backward here, but apparently Britney Spears was walking around somewhere going to the Froger shop or wherever, and she tripped and it very nearly dropped her baby. Is that what it is?
Yeah. She's walking through New York.
Whatever his name is, Preston?
Sean Preston.
So she's walking through New York with the baby. She trips, nearly drops the baby on the crowded New York City sidewalks. But she did not. There's a happy ending. The baby was spared. The baby did not fall. And there's this great picture of the baby sort of like in mid, like he's doing like a triple Lindy, you know, like the 80 Olympics. He's sort of off the, and his hat is falling. And then there's this other photo of Britney Spears looking fat and pudgy and pasty and bad, crying her little white trash eyes out over...
It's so sad.
It's a whole lot of like, what has become of my life? What have I... Have I become all that I once despised? Or whatever people from Louisiana say. You shut my mouth or something. And we weren't going to talk about it because in the picture, she just looked very legitimately upset at you. It is a pretty sad photograph. Have you posted it? Is it on your site?
It's on my site.
It's at SarahXDillon.com. But then, we found the phrase that made the whole story worthwhile. We weren't going to read the story because, you know, it was very nearly tragedy averted. But there was one sentence of the story that made the whole thing glow like a golden sun to us. And so we'll get to that later. We will do a Britney watch later on today. Plus a geek watch and a completely horrifying penis watch. We'll get to that as well. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time once again. Let's go to your personal savior, a man known only as Tim Riley at the City Desk.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the City Desk, Tim Riley.
From high atop the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents City Desk News. Meet Tim Riley reporting. A pilot who's 81 years old crashed his plane into a bunch of trees in Battleground last night. The crash sparked a fire, but crews quickly brought under control. The pilot is a little bit burned, but he'll be okay. Apparently, there were 2- and 3-story flames coming out of this thing, but I guess he'll fly again. He's 81 years old. His name is Anthony Diamond. He overshot his private runway. He had his own runway, apparently, and crashed into those trees in
Battleground. Where was this at?
Battleground.
All right. Okay.
Oh, listen to this. This just came in.
I'm going to skip the obligatory joke about blah, 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 plane, blah, 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 left turn indicator blinking, blah, 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 blah. There's just no point.
No, no, no.
It's beneath me.
This breaking story, prisoners with improvised weapons clash with guards trying to stop a detainee from committing suicide at the U.S. prison in Guantanamo Bay. The detainees use fans, some turned on high, light fixtures and other improvised weapons to attack the guards as they enter a communal living area to stop a prisoner from trying to hang himself. Earlier in the day, three detainees in another part of the prison attempted suicide by wallowing prescription medicine they had been hoarding. There have been 39 suicide attempts at Gitmo since the prison opened in January 2002. At least 12 were in one section.
So this is what the prison is trying to commit suicide, and yeah, the guards come in with the truncheons a-swing and trying to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
And then
the detainees point fans at him.
You stay away, or we will give you a most severe cooling. You will feel a breeze of Allah as such you have never felt before. So the guards are trying to stop the guy from committing suicide, and the prisoners are in turn, it's like a house that Jack built. The prisoners are in turn trying to stop the guards
with fans.
Okay, but that's not the funny part. Well, it is funny. First of all, if you're in prison, I didn't think you had access to anything. You weren't even allowed pointy sticks. Why would you give a guy a fan?
It's hot down there.
Well, I suppose, but that's, you know, if you're a terrorist, it seems like heat is probably the least of your worries. There's a prisoner trying to kill himself.
Well, several have tried to.
Okay, we keep getting derailed here. Just make it through this just once.
All right.
So the prisoner trying to kill himself, the guards say, hey, look at that guy, he's trying to hang himself.
Let's stop it.
They come in, and then the other prisoners try to stop the guards from stopping the suicide.
Correct, yeah.
Well, okay, well, that's sort of a team effort at least. Who says that we can't work together in this time of turmoil and strife in this country? Here's why you should never let access to a fan be an issue in a prison, though, because who here has toured Alcatraz? Anyone?
Mm-hmm. Right. I've been by it.
If you've gone through...
it's pretty creepy.
Yeah, Alcatraz is fantastic. It's the best place ever. Were we on the air when I did that? We were, I guess, but I didn't...
You didn't call.
I called, but I guess I didn't play it back on the air. No, I did this whole thing. I toured Alcatraz and there's this great thing where they will, it's kind of cool actually, because when you tour Alcatraz, which I encourage everybody to do because I think they might actually be closing it because apparently it's a huge safety hazard because the salt water in the air is just decaying everything. The whole place is just a crumbling ruin. But they do this great thing where you can like walk right into the cells. Like it's not like most cool things that you tour where everything is, where there's like a velvet rope and a big wall of glass and you can't touch anything and you're not allowed to get near anything that's actually, like, you can walk right into a cell and slam the door shut behind you. It's pretty fantastic.
Like scared straight.
It is unnerving. I don't care how tough, I don't care how hard you think you are. There's this segment where they take you down to the hole. And they do the solitary confinement cells at Alcatraz. And you can walk right into a cell for solitary confinement and they will swing the door shut. And you are in there and it is pitch black. No sound, no light, no air movement, nothing. Cold cement floor. I mean, it is fantastically unnerving. But I did this great thing where I called my voicemail at home, and I'm calling from Alcatraz. I'm in the hole. And then I was going to play it back on the air, and I don't think I did. That is not my point. My point is this, that I grew up, like many young men, as an Alcatraz aficionado, and especially that whole escape that happened, as depicted in Escape from Alcatraz with Clint Eastwood, and Alcatraz, the whole shocking story with Telly Savalas. And there's this whole thing where... it was a pair of brothers that escaped, and the one guy like pulled a seat, it's like a ventilation fan or something, it was in his seat, and he pulled it out and he used it to make a drill. The point is, don't ever let prisoners have fans. There's a long way to go for a short lesson, but you know what I'm talking about.
Was that the end of the story?
Now page five. Let's move on.
Well, Misha Barton's OC character was killed off last night as the third season came to an end. Misha Barton was killed in a car accident. Nobody tried to stop it. Barton's character was central to the show, which follows four wealthy Newport Beach teens throughout the emotional ups and downs of high school life. She won't be missed.
I was waiting for... Well, what was his name? Bill... what was that guy's name that we worked with at Entercom? Bill...
Curtis?
Bill Kim.
Bill Kim. Bill Kim.
We had the guy from the OC on the show.
Bill Kim was on the OC?
No, it's all stopped now. Bill Kim is a big... He's a large, he's a barrel-chested man who worked at the sports station over at Entercom, and then also worked. He ran Imus or something.
Yeah, he ran Imus in the morning.
And so we would see, but he was like the least likely OC fan ever. He's just like this big sort of redneck baseball fan, cool guy, but I mean not the kind of guy you would not look at him and think that he was an OC fan. And he was. Who was that guy that we had from the OC in the studio for like ten minutes?
He played Ryan the Troubled Youth. He's the main character.
It was some guy.
His name's Benjamin McKenzie.
So we had Benjamin McKenzie on to talk about voting or something?
Yeah.
Political?
He was really short.
He was really short, and his handlers were mean.
Yeah.
And I kept trying to pump it. Like, who cares what some guy from the OC thinks about voting? His alleged thoughts on the political system. No one cares. And I kept trying to... And so the entire time I'm in the studio, Bill Kim is over there whispering in my ear, like, ask him about the prom episode. Ask him about that episode where he lost his virginity. And I'm trying to ask, like... three questions about Howard Dean and then like one question about the OC and it just didn't work out. And then his people were all annoyed at me because I kept trying to turn the conversation back to the OC as though there's like any surprise there.
Yeah.
Like I would be asking him about anything else. So
that's why the election ended up going the way it did.
It's true. It's all Benjamin, what's his name's fault?
McKenzie.
And I would like to, by the way, thank USA Today for skipping the obligatory, the OC, you know, like OC, DOA, or... you know, whatever, which is what I expected this morning. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, the president spent some time in Arizona, which is one of the hotspots for illegal aliens. It didn't see one yesterday. But he knows why many want to come to the United States.
If someone's willing to do a job Americans aren't doing, here's a temporary way to come and work. Here's a tamper-proof card. So you don't have to sneak across the border. You can walk across the border. And you can do that work.
It's a tamper-proof card, just like those tamper-proof MP3s that I'm apparently not able to download off the internet anymore.
And a lot of the fault has to go to these smugglers.
A lot of people around the country don't understand what a coyote is, but there's somebody who, for money, will smuggle people in the United States so they can work. We want to know who's coming in the country and who's not coming in the country.
All right, thank you.
Go to any major manufacturer, you'll find who's coming into this country.
Cultural liaison, George W. Bush.
Meanwhile, Governor Schwarzenegger says sending the National Guard does not solve the problem.
If that will help to prevent people coming across the border for right now, then we are more than happy to join in and to help temporarily. But it definitely should not be a permanent solution.
It's not going to work. 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 I don't know how many times I can say that. If they would just listen to me and Jim Roop, we would have this problem solved by next Tuesday. But nobody pays any attention to these solutions. So this is, it's like trying to hold back a flood with cheesecloth. Not going to have any effect at all. She does have a sticky forehead.
I know.
I'm looking over there right now. Is it on your website?
No, I'm still writing the commentary. It'll be up in a second.
It's not up there yet, but later on, in a short while, later this hour, you'll be able to see this picture of Tyra Banks at SarahXDillon.com.
I can't figure out what it is.
It looks like some kind of glue.
It looks like she's bald and she actually has like this giant piece of head stuck onto her.
She's got an oddly shaped head, too. Let's just call it...
She does.
Her head looks...
And if she had fake hair, don't you think she could, like, pull it down a little bit further?
You know what I never understand is... let's talk about fake hair for a second, because you... The steadily approaching disfiguring baldness here that is afflicting the host of this radio program. It has been a subject of scorn and mockery and discussion for some time. So I feel that I'm able to talk about it in terms of other people. I don't understand... Did you ever see somebody who's really rich and they've got the worst hair piece you could, like
Donald
the toupee
Trump.
That's so...
Paris Hilton.
But Trump's, but that's his real hair. I saw a whole thing about it on TV, on the TV. I saw an entire thing all about Trump. It was it on What Not to Wear? What was that show? Somebody knows. It was on...
Donald Trump was not on What Not to Wear.
Says Tim after close inspection of his duds.
Yes.
He was on some show. It was some one of the 9,000 makeover shows. We are losing our cultural unity, and I blame satellite television for this because now it used to be that you could say on that show that was on at 8 o'clock last night, and there was only two channels. You know, there's only three networks, but you could only ever get two of them. Everything else was fuzzy, and your dad was standing behind the television with a coat hanger, desperately trying to fix the reception. And so we all watched the same crap. Now no one knows. Anyway, the point is that Donald Trump was on some makeover show, and the models accused him of having a toupee. And it's either the best toupee that's ever been created, or he's telling the truth, and that's his real hair. Because they were giving it a good yank, and it didn't want to move. They claimed that the roots went all the way down to the surface of his head. I don't know. I'm thinking Elton John, though. Because Elton John has got more money than God, and yet Like, every time you see that guy, he's got a worse toupee. He's never had one that looked convincing, ever. Elton John, there ought to be some sort of flash animation on the internet. It's the many hairs of Elton. You know what I mean? Because he went from being, he did that like thing like Kevin Dubrow from Quiet Riot did, where he was bald, then the thick hair, then bald again, then another bad toupee, then bald, then a comb over. It just never worked. Same thing with Tyra Banks. You think she's got infinite financial resources. She does this America's Next Top Model thing. It looks as though they have shaved her head and then glued on some ill-fitting hairpiece right onto her scalp. And they forgot to daub away the excess sort of epoxy around her forehead. And it's just sort of dribbling down into her face like Shatner style. Well, in any event, that'll be up later. Mm-hmm. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, Donald Rumsfeld likens border deployment to fighting forest fires.
The people weren't recruited into the military to go fight fires, but by golly, the Garden Reserve does that every year, and they do it because someone has to go do it a short period of time, and there are people who have those skill sets.
Okay. What? I don't understand. I don't know.
A Portland woman has been jailed after protesting at Donald Rumsfeld's house. She's 27-year-old Katie Heald. She said, quote, I came all the way from Portland, Oregon to give a message for my community that Donald Rumsfeld should be fired for taking us into a disastrous war. I guess she was immediately arrested for that.
All right.
A Long Island radio station said somebody took over their airwaves Wednesday morning and broadcast a song with racial slurs for nearly 2 minutes. Radio.
Where is this at?
This is West Babylon, New York.
Yeah, because New York radio lately has been so racially sensitive and tolerant.
Mm-hmm. Radio officials at WBAB-FM say around 7:15 a.m., during the John Parise and Roger Lucci morning show, somebody...
This is only in New York would you ever have that, too.
Okay. Somebody hijacked their signal playing a racially offensive song aimed at blacks. Program director John Olson says it's the work of a professional.
They understand the broadcast business, had a hack into our signal, gained access to our signal, and they had the equipment to broadcast over our airway.
Okay, yes, the return of Captain Midnight. Whatever you say.
Police have nabbed a speeding BMW on I-84 near Troutdale after the car posted an eye-popping 146 mile an hour on their speed detection equipment.
Which is not, by the way, the record. This guy was attempting to say that the record is 159 miles per hour.
159 set in 1993.
Now, the weird thing about this 159 miles per hour is I can't, for the life of me, find any record of who it was or what he was driving.
Mm-mm. Nope, okay. Doesn't say.
All right, so who is this? He's some thick-neck tool user, isn't he?
Travis J. Olson, who's 31 of Portland.
Yeah.
Was behind the wheel of a high-performance BMW 540 that is now in a police impound facility. He claims he was late for a meeting and tried to make up for lost time. Now, the law says if you're caught in speed over 100 miles an hour, automatically the fine can be over $1,000.
Yeah, because I think I think the deal is that if you are going twice the speed limit, it becomes what the police call reckless endangerment, which is, you know, whatever.
It shouldn't count for a BMW, because that's pretty much under control. It's not like you're driving an American car.
No, and I got to say that I'm a huge, like, I am the best driver, though, as I get older, when I'm not running into things at stoplights, taking the door off by backing up Tommy Boy style. But in terms of speeding, the thing about speeding is I just become an enormous sissy as I've gotten older. This is another when I was a boy.
I had a coat hanger on the back of my television.
Attention, Sarah Dillon. I guess I'm becoming, this is another old, Rick, when I
oh,
was.
Oh, I've got your music.
When I was, yeah, thank you. When I was young.
And the microwave had a dial on it.
I used to just... who remembers Tab? I used to do these overnight shifts. Radio stations used to employ DJs. And DJs used to be live people who sat in the studio and played songs. And they were there, and they did things, and you could call and talk to them. Anyway, but I would have like a midnight shift, and I would wake up at like 11:55, and I would be tearing up the backwoods of like Spokane at like 120 miles an hour trying to get to work. I just don't do that. I've just become such a colossal sissy in terms of speeding. I just don't do it at all. And it's like when I go through one of those, like I was driving to Holgate yesterday, and there's one of those clearly a zone that's just there for revenue collection purposes, where it's just... Why does there need to be a school zone where it's 20 miles an hour, 24 hours a day, during the summer? Don't make any sense. I'll tell you what, when the revolution comes, that's something that's going to change right there. Not that I would encourage, I am not encouraging that you vote with rifles in any way, because that's wrong. But I don't know what we're talking about. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Lisa Goddard's going to be around the corner. We'll talk about this English language bill that passed the Senate. Later on, we'll talk about the Da Vinci Code, Scott Daly, top five songs from this week in 1980. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show, live from Portland on AM 970, Solid State Radio. It's Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. Later on, CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy is going to be here to talk about the decomposing theoretical body of Jimmy Hoffa. What else? Oh, we'll talk about the Da Vinci Code. See, here's the... I hope it's a two-parter. This week we can talk about how it's opening. Next week we can talk about its colossal implosion and failure. And it's vanishing from the cultural radar, so I don't need to waste any more showtime on it. But you know what? I got to have my finger on the cultural pulse, so we will do that. Later on, Scott Daly's going to be here from FilmFeverRadio.com. We got the top five songs from this week in 1980. We'll have the inaugural edition of a brand-new Rick Emerson Show. Watch. So I stay there. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson program, live from the Hill, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. How are you, Lisa?
Hey, Rick. How are you?
You're sounding perky today.
Well, you know, it's Friday.
I shouldn't say perky. Let me ask you this. I read this whole...
Why shouldn't you say perky?
Well, I don't wish to offend.
What's going on?
I will tell you that I read this whole story the other day where they said that they believed that perky was a pejorative, or that women at least took it that way when it was directed at them in a professional sense.
Oh, wow.
And this was all about Katie Couric.
But I know.
It was all about Katie Couric, and they were noting that all of the media, like 80% of stories about Katie Couric, had used the descriptive perky.
Yeah, I believe that.
And there was a whole sidebar about how when you say perky to a woman, they want to put your eyes out with something.
Wow, you know, I'm okay with it. It's not, you know, it's there's other words I'd probably pick first, but I think it's, I don't take it negatively. I think it's all right.
If you had to pick three adjectives to describe yourself, Lisa, what would they be?
Oh, geez, what is this? This is like a Miss America question now. This is awful.
I'm saying we're trying to, it's not. Well, I know that you have many facets.
Tongue-tied would be one right now. otherwise, I'd say a thoughtful and probably ridiculously outgoing. That's two, but I'd hyphenate.
No, we accept those. See, I'm just saying it's like we're trying, you know, I know that you have many layers as a broadcast journalist, so we are just trying to paint a complete picture of you, as it were. Hey, let's talk about them.
Speaking of language.
Oh, God, yeah. Look at C, and again with a segue. This was a thing that totally got sprung on us, because normally we kind of have our ear to the railroad track, as it were, on these kind of things. But we were calling yesterday, we had talking to Laura Caviezel at CNN.
Right.
And she said, hey, do you want to have somebody come on? And we ended up not doing it because the legislation, it wasn't developed enough as a story.
They were voting right as you were on air. And
yeah.
I thought it was going to happen in time, but they took too long with it.
So I had no idea this was even happening, though. She blindsided us with this. She said the Senate was passing an amendment to its immigration reform bill that would make it easier for guest workers, I'm reading that, to apply for residency. But the big news about it was they were amending it to make English the national language of the United States.
That's right.
And so where are things as of right now? Because this story went from like 0 to 60 in like an hour.
That's right. You know, I called Laura and I said, you need to tell affiliates this is going on because I was pretty amazed once I picked up that it was going to pass. And it is not a simple story. It sounds like it should be, but it's not. The deal is they passed two different amendments that do two different things, and they are both in the bill. The first one that passed by a large majority, I think 66 votes, I'll check, 63 votes, passed saying that English should be our national language and that people don't have the right to request for services in another language unless there's a separate law letting them do that. And there are some laws for some places that allow that now, but they're really putting forth that English is the primary language of the United States. The second amendment that also passed would say English is our unifying and common language, really wouldn't change very much as far as I could see. It was much more of a kumbaya to use Spanish, kind of amendment. But both of those amendments are now in the Senate version of the bill, which sets up a whole other fight when they go to conference over whether which one will end up in the final bill, if either one.
Okay, hey, let's take this. No. Just go in reverse order here.
Great.
Is kumbaya a real word?
I think it's more than one word. Is it one word? I don't speak Spanish. I speak Russian. I don't know. I think it's more than one word. One of your callers is going to call in and help us out and call us both idiots.
Okay, now we're... No, that would never happen. They respect us both as professionals.
Great.
Okay, but now we're branching off into other... First of all, it's two words. And secondly, you speak Russian?
I do.
That's fantastic. All right, so someone call and tell us what kumbaya means, whether it's one word or two. So one bill would say that English is the national language, but is that just sort of a symbolic bit of legislation? That part of it there, is that just sort of one of those resolutions that doesn't have the force of law? It sounds like the first one is the one that has the force of law.
They were going to make English the official language of the United States. Then they changed it so that it would be national language, implying that official language mandates that everything in government would be in English. They felt like national language doesn't indicate that, but there is a separate line after that indicating that people don't have an automatic right to ask for services in another language, and also indicating that unless it's separately authorized, government services should be in English. And as I said, there are many agencies, especially health agencies, that do have authorization to, for example, send pamphlets out, not just in Spanish, but in Vietnamese, in many languages, to try and reach out to different communities. But that has to be specifically authorized by law under this national language idea.
I have no idea which of these would be more catastrophically difficult to put into place. I just can't even, because on the one hand, you got a whole passel of people in this country that clearly don't speak English as a primary language, and sometimes not even as a secondary language.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I can't even imagine the bureaucratic and tax cost to the taxpayers of having to go, every time you go into a government agency, they're having to have facilities to be able to accommodate people who speak, come in and speak Mandarin Chinese. I can't even imagine how much that costs us every year.
That's one of the arguments that people are saying, is that we need to really focus on English. We need to do something to give even more incentive to people to learn English, because that is the language, they say, that is critical to success in this country. But others say that, in fact, Harry Reid on the floor of the Senate, the minority leader, said bluntly he thinks this is a racist amendment. He thinks it's targeting Hispanics, which, of course, are at the center of the immigration debate, and that he thinks it is unfair to them, that it could lead to other problems in hospitals which may not have a specific Spanish authorization. The truth of the matter is nobody really knows exactly what that amendment would do. There's a sense from both sides that either it would help a lot in helping people learn English, or it would hurt some people, and the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
All right, so, and it's been a long time since Schoolhouse Rock, so you'll have to help me. So this it goes to the House, and then something else happens, and then something else happens, and then
I know, yeah, and then Aaron Sorkin writes about it. But no, trying to bring it back.
Well, that's a callback in comedic terms right there.
It does go, the House has finished its bill, and they're done, they're waiting, they're sitting there tapping their fingers, and the Senate will likely finish up its bill next week, likely with both of these amendments on English in it. Then the House and Senate gets together. They'll argue over everything under the sun. This will be one of those things they argue about. Some people in the House really like this idea of English as a national language, so it could stay in. Others say it's all politics and election year fighting. These folks want to look patriotic, and that's why they supported it, and it might not end up actually happening.
Let me just as a final observation.
Sorry,
here.
That was a lot. Yeah.
No, it's okay. I'm just going to say here's why I'm a big fan of huge sweeping amendments that just cause all kinds of entropy and discord.
Right.
I like things. You know what it is? I just like things that are occasional. A monkey in the wrench, a fly in the ointment. I just like for people to pass laws that just have a traumatic and divisive effects on the country, because then it gives us more prep. So that's really where I stand on this. It's purely from a entertainment point of view. I just like things that cause discord.
Right. Well, I think that you might not be alone here in actually that the people on both sides of the aisle are trying to cause a little trouble with these amendments. But by and large, most people want to look as red, white, and blue flag waving Americans, which some folks say is a problem itself if you're doing that for political reasons. So there are some folks on your side, you know, and I'll tell you this, maybe I shouldn't, but Cynthia McKinney, keep that name open. We may have some news on that front in the next week or not. We'll see.
Cynthia McKinney, I didn't hear it from you.
That's right, right. Nor did all of your many listeners.
No. Thank you, Lisa Goddard. You have a good weekend.
You too.
All right, there you go. Lisa Goddard from The Hill right there, CNN radio correspondent. See, who can deny, having listened to that exchange, that Lisa Goddard has,
enlightening lunchtime conversation.
Feelings about me that are not unwarm. Let's put it that way.
I would say she values her professional relationship with you.
Why do you got to be so mean? Why do you got to take something that's beautiful and step on it and crush it, huh? Why do you got
to
do that?
Why do you have to be so creepy?
It's my only skill. Kumbaya is Yiddish for Inna Gadda Davida. Okay. Kumbaya is...
I think that's an Australian folk song.
Okay, I'm reading all of these definitions that people are sending me for Kumbaya, and they all claim to have the definitive definition. First of all, everybody's giving a different etymology for the word. They're all claiming it comes from a different country. This is like when you ask people why they tap their cigarettes and no one really knows. Everybody's got a different reason here. All right, we'll figure it out. It's 503-733-2970. Here's Tim Riley, the City Desk.
I got two Utah stories for you. One.
Fantastic.
70,000 beer cans are found in an Ogden townhouse. A seemingly unbelievable mess.
Have you seen the picture of this?
I have.
Go to rickemerson.com. It is today's weblog entry. You really, I don't say this a lot, you have got to see this to believe this. It's real. It's not fake. This is not an urban legend. This is not a Photoshop. This is not guy's got a lot of free time in his hands. He put together a photograph. You have never really seen... Everybody should bow down before the glory of this dude house. We've talked about the House of Guys, the Casa de Vatos. I don't care how messy your house is. I don't care how many Kyle the interns you've got living at your place. You have never seen anything like this picture. So go to rickemerson.com. Click on the today's weblog entry and look at it as you are reading, as you are hearing Tim discuss this story.
Well, a seemingly unbelievable mess was discovered at an Ogden townhouse, and it's become an internet legend. Well, it turns out it is real. When property manager Ryan Forer got a call from a realtor last year to check on a townhouse, he knew something was up. He said, "This is the sickest thing I've ever seen. Just unimaginable that somebody would live like that." He couldn't even open the front door. It was blocked from inside. There were beer cans, I could probably say, this high up to the door. The realtor had forewarned him about the smell. He poked his head in. The smell was so awful he couldn't go in. At the back door, the realtor was astounded by what he saw in the kitchen. As we approached the door, there were beer boxes all the way to the ceiling.
When you talk about the beer cans and how they are everywhere, literally, there's multiple photos of this guy's house at my site. I posted them. And it's literally beer cans crushed and stacked up to your waist through this entire house, in the bathroom, in the kitchen. It really is like wading through that recycling plant that your dad would take you to when you were like 9 years old and you turn in 500 bottles and you get like 3.5 cents for it.
Well, inside, he took just a few snapshots to document the scene. Beer cans by the tens of thousands, mountains of beer cans burying the furniture. The water and heat shut off, apparently on purpose by the tenant, who evidently drank Coors Light beer exclusively for the 8 years he lived there.
And that's the other thing, is you got to wonder, every time a story like this happens, I wonder how the company feels about it. It's like the Heaven's Gate people wearing Nikes. You got to wonder if somewhere Phil Knight's going, excellent, you know, and rubbing his hands together in a Smithers-like fashion, or Burns-like fashion. The thing about this, you've got to wonder what Coors Light thinks about this, because clearly it's a man who is a big fan of their product. On the other hand, he's clearly crazy.
70,000 cans that were recycled for $800.
Yeah.
74 beers a day for 8 years.
All right, good times.
Utah story number two.
Here to the second one, and then we'll try to get to figure the Kumbaya thing.
Some bizarre claims are being made in Utah, where workers spray painting fences for utility lines and television cables are accused of spraying dogs as well. The Humane Society of Utah says it's happened in the towns of Sandy and Centerville. The dog spray in Centerville will have to have a vet get the paint out of its ears. While a supervisor in Sandy actually admitted that one of their workers painted a dog. No utility companies in Sandy would say if their employees were involved in such an incident. John Paul Fox is with the Humane Society, and he said it would be best for the companies to notify customers before they start the painting and notify pit owners immediately if an incident happens. Most of the time, a ticket could be issued if a dog is sprayed inside a yard with a fence.
Okay, there you go. Centerville, by the way, which is not an especially enlightened part of Utah. Our good friend and linguist, Diana from downtown with you.
Hello?
Hi, Diana. Is this, you have the kumbaya answer.
Well, I have one, since there appeared to be a plethora, but this one sounds the most likely.
All right.
It's based from the Gullah language, G-U-L-L-A-H, and that's a language dialect that's spoken off the coast of Georgia and South Carolina.
What do you mean off the coast of Georgia? What?
There are islands out there.
Okay.
Okay, former slaves moved out there, got away from Whitey. And
oh, so it's like an African dialect?
Right.
Okay.
Well, they figure it's a combination of English, Creole, and West African languages.
All right, but what does it mean, do you suppose?
Well, kumbaya means come on by or come by here.
Kumbaya, my lord. So it's like a Jesus, come on over kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Come on down, brah.
Okay. Let's never say that again.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Diana. All right. There you go. That's Diana from downtown. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Well, let's see what's on TV today. Oh, it's a Paula Abdul movie night. The Waiting Game is on Lifetime channel. Strangers bring romance and intrigue to two New England friends.
With Paula Abdul?
Yeah. And Chandra West, whoever she is.
I have no idea. Who even knew that Paula Abdul made movies?
1998. And then Paula Abdul is Larry King's guest tonight. Larry King is also a Conan O'Brien's guest.
Okay.
And let's see here. Mary Chaney is on The Letterman Show.
All right. So there you go. So, but I have I've exhausted all my Larry King humor. There's only so many times I can make the purple garlic joke or whatever it is.
The budget for the newest Man of Steel film has skyrocketed. The New York Post reports that Superman Returns, which was originally expected to cost $200 million to make, had its price permanently ballooned to $300 million.
How can a movie cost $300 million to make? I don't mean to sound like an old curmudgeon, but seriously, in the name of holy God, what is it that you could be? There's not even anybody in that movie that is expensive, is there? There's nobody. I mean, there's Kevin Spacey, I think, and that's it.
There's Kate Bosworth, James Marsden, and Kevin Spacey, and the new Superman, Brandon Routh.
Yeah, well, Kevin Spacey's got to be the most expensive guy in that film. I've seen the trailer. I've seen some of the. How much?
That poster is really cool, though, for it.
I don't know.
You don't like it?
It's okay. I don't know. I'm all conflicted.
What about the grip that has to hold him up with the wires? That must have cost a little in overtime.
It's got this weird kind of. I don't know, the new Superman poster's got this, it's kind of this weird sort of flaming Jesus kind of a thing. You know what I mean? Not like on fire, but I mean, it's just sort of a...
I thought it was pretty cool.
Sort of style.
Well, it's flying up over the water?
It's okay. It's not, well, are we talking about the same one? It's where he's looking down on the earth and he's posed like this?
Yeah, and his cape is covering the top of it and he's looking down and there's the water, but it's just kind of a top version of him.
It's okay. I mean, I tread lightly here. I don't wish to cause discord in the geek community. All I'm saying is this.
This would upset everyone.
No, I know that it sounds un-American for me to speak ill of Superman in any way.
Hellebont.
I do this. I know that if I do this, Toby Keith is going to come and beat my ass. Superman is the archetypal and the definitive. He is the superhero. He is the wellspring, the source, the Rosetta Stone, the motherlode for all superheroes. I do acknowledge that. I also acknowledge the greatness of past Superman works, excluding Superman's 3 and 4. But here's the problem, as I see it, with Superman. And again, a character that I respect, a superhero that he is rich with cultural and psychological layering and texture and significance. But in 2006, one cannot escape the fact that Superman looks silly. He just does. It's like in that trailer, isn't there that sequence on the trailer where he's on the rooftop in Metropolis and he's walking, he and Lois Lane are walking towards each other on the rooftop of the building. You just cannot have a grown man walking around in red and blue underoos with a long cape and not have him look silly.
Why not?
I'm not.
Where should he be walking?
I'm not trying to bust on Superman. I'm just saying, I believe to our 21st century eyes, it just. I understand the bind that they're in because you can't really give Superman a makeover. I think they've tried that, and I think it's worked out badly in the past. But it is just difficult to look at the character and not view him in a sort of kitsy and look. Here are the phones. Here comes the hate. I'm just speaking the plain truth as I see it.
Okay.
All right. Let's. Hi, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
Hello?
Hi, hello, who is this?
Oh, she's saying it's Aaron.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Hold me. Like you did by the lake on Naboo.
Smack record now. What's up?
Well, first you got to take back all that Superman hate, you little...
I'm not hating on Superman. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did they or did they not sort of redesign the Spider-Man costume for a while because they felt that it was... I mean, they do this with superheroes occasionally. They redesign the costume and the look.
Yeah, they mess with the costume. Like, Spider-Man went black for a while. Not Spider-Man himself.
He could never go back. Did he? All right, never mind. There's a joke there that I'm not going to... Go ahead.
Yeah, but Superman, they've tried changing his costume multiple times in the comics, and it always sucks. They always come back to the, you know, the classic look.
Right.
You can't mess with that.
Okay.
So, but anyway... There's a reason why the budget has swelled to like $300 million.
All right.
Is that they're also factoring in the fact that they had to pay off Kevin Smith and Tim Burton.
Oh, and Tim Burton and Nicolas Cage.
All that stuff. Like 10 years ago.
That is true, because there were pay-or-play deals with Nicolas Cage and Burton and Kevin Smith, meaning that they had to get paid even if they ended up not doing anything. Because this is... this is like the ninth iteration of this, because there was supposed to be like a Superman versus something or other, like Batman.
This has been talked about since like right after Kevin Smith did Mallrats. This is how long Superman Returns has been somehow in the works.
Right. And so there have been so many different versions of this film that were supposed to happen and then didn't.
Right, pretty much, yeah. I mean, yeah, the Wolfgang Peterson wanted to do Batman versus Superman movie, which is a stupid idea.
Right.
Because Batman would win, like, in the first 5 minutes, the movie would be over.
All right, so...
that's the reason why the budget's so massive.
All right, I will give it up for the trailer using Marlon Brando, and it's all very, you know, chill-inducing and so forth.
Oh, Williams music gives you chills.
Yeah,
it's pretty perfect trailer.
But here's the other thing. Here's the problem, though. The problem with the... All right, we're just so fully wading hip deep into the geek here that
Sarah just leaves the room and she just
Sarah has already like in her brain is like a computer that's just gone to standby mode, you know, and you got to jiggle the mouse to get it to, you know.
Did she jiggle anything this summer?
Yeah, the the
what did you say?
Nothing.
Okay. The thing about the Superman Returns trailer, again, I give it up for using Brando because I totally was like, oh, it's so great, and listen to that. And I can't do the lines perfectly like you can, but it's that whole, you know, they want to be a great people or whatever. What does he say?
No, I couldn't do it either. It's Brando's like, they wish to be a good people. They only need the light to show their way. You know? I just got the chills and I'm saying, and I'm a hackish and Brando impersonator.
Yeah, but see, this is the... But the problem is, as great as that use of Marlon Brando in the Superman Returns trailer was, at the same time, that's a warning sign to me, because it is really making me, it's cheating to get me excited about the film. Do you know what I mean? It's like Lucas doing all of those really obvious callbacks to the original trilogy for all of the trailers and the whatever. Like, and he's totally getting...
Alan Guinness, the show, like Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, it's, you know what I mean? It's like having your wife get you turned on by dressing up like Jenna Jameson. You know what I mean? It's just a...
No.
Me either. I'm just saying, I suppose it works, but it's kind of a sad reflection on the original product. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, yeah.
That was awkward. Let's,
In a way.
Yeah, well, okay. Let's, we're done now.
Okay.
All right, there you go.
Feel any different now?
No.
Okay.
Let's see. Let's get Sean. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Oh, hey, Rick. This is, you said Sean. But, the reason that Superman always looks silly in the movies is with the, like, the red and the blue spandex is that the guy they always have casting him is always really skinny. Like, if you remember Chris Reeves, he was, like, he's tall, but he wasn't very big. And this Brandon Routh guy is also, like, really skinny. So they put on this spandex on him, and he just looks kind of goofy. But if he was, like, built like Superman in the comic books, he'd be, like, bulking and huge. And so no matter how silly his outfit looks, it'd still be intimidating.
Yes. There is a sort of a bulkification that has happened to not only superheroes and comic book characters, but also here's an interesting thing. And this is my goal to alienate every woman who is listening to the radio show. Let me just continue this a little bit further. Here's an interesting thing. Now listen now, and you will be able to hear the sound of thousands of female hands, delicately manicured fingernails, reaching for the volume knob.
They're
to
already
turn,
gone.
To, you're only here because you're getting paid. If you, wait for it, if you go back and look at your original Kenner Star Wars figures from 1977, you take your Darth Vader, you take your Luke Skywalker, you what have your, not your IG-88, but you know, whatever, one of your human Star Wars figures from 1977, look at that same character in the figures that Lucas put out when the original trilogy was re-released in like 96, 97, whatever that was. Like, they are all so buff now. You look at the Darth Vader from back in the day, and he's all skinny, looks like a normal guy. You look at the Darth Vader figure now, and he's like Charles Atlas. He's all got the huge steroid-like muscles going on and whatnot. It's all really weird. All right, we should just end this now, Sean.
Okay, I understand. I just figured I'd put in my two.
No, and I, it was, and Sean, it was appreciated, and I thank you,
okay.
Sir. All right, there you go.
All right,
there you go. Okay. It's 5. The show will never recommence. Literally, I would have to start talking about, like...
We haven't even finished the first hour yet.
I would have to start talking about...
Let's finish it now.
That's a good idea. It's time for a commercial break.
I'd have to start talking about guiding light and pedicures and stuff now. All right.
Dusting.
It's like Laura Ashley glasses. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Or Rick at RickEmerson.com. Here's what's coming up. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. Scott Daly from Film Fever Radio. Top 5 songs from this week in 1980. Don't go anywhere. Rick Emerson Show back after this on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Here is Ned Sneebly.
Rock on, Ryan. You better get me to school on time.